Welcome back to the show, everyone. You are listening to Traveling with Françoise. And for those of you just joining us, yes, we do start at 11 a.m. in the morning. The first hour is a local event show. And then we switch gears and kick ourselves right on into travel. Joining us in the boardroom, as always, is Sean Flanagan. Hey, Sean.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Yeah. I'm doing good. Are you still doing good back there?
I'm doing good. Everything worked this time, so we're
good.
I know.
Yeah, we had a little tiny glitch right in the beginning, but we'll forget those glitches. They do happen. Yes, they do happen. So today we have a very interesting travel hour for everyone out there. We are going to talk to Tom Nolan. He is the executive director. Yes, they have one, of the Palm Springs International Airport. And Tom and I have been talking. He's already in studio. And he said, Françoise, nothing is off limits. Which, Sean, how many people say that?
It sounds dangerous.
It does sound dangerous. It's not dangerous because, you know, but I think that's really nice because airports are always the topic of conversation somehow in the news, good, bad, or indifferent.
Right. Yeah. Always.
When it comes to travel. And everybody's always looking for ways to bypass. I get this all the time. Françoise, what's the best way to buy? Where do I go to buy airline tickets? Well, that is so difficult because it just depends. If you want to just hop on a jet at the airline's whim,
right,
then there's a lot of sites for that. But it's at their whim. If you want a really structured itinerary, you're going to have to do something different. If you don't want to nonstop, if you want a nonstop and you don't want to stop somewhere, that's a different.
See, I've gone for nonstops, but I've also spent nights in airports.
So. Yeah, so
I've gone very unscheduled as well.
Gone very unscheduled, yeah. So you don't ever know. So that's what we're going to be talking about. All sorts of things. It's going to be a lot of fun. I just kind of toss it up in the air. Sean and I've been talking. We've been doing our worst case scenario survival card game, the Travel Edition. I have a question picked out for Tom. And I think we're going to have to give him one of the trivia questions also.
I think you should.
I think so. I think we'll do that. All right. Yesterday on KSQ, yesterday morning, I did a segment on the Pageant of the Masters. I have tickets for those for you to win on the website. We are so fortunate to get those tickets. And I have actually a series of tickets to give away, and they're all for August. So go to the website, Traveling with Françoise. Also, the show with the California Science Center is now airing on Fox 11 at noon on Thursdays and 5:30 a.m. on Friday morning. Mornings. Don't miss it. We have some great shows coming up, too. We're going to go to Carlsbad. We're going to do a Pageant of the Masters behind the scenes on the television show. We also are going to Nashville. So we have lots of great episodes coming up. So again, check that out on noon on Fox 11 and Friday morning at 5:30 a.m. And if you miss an episode after it airs for a couple weeks, I try to run them three weeks in a row right now, then they go onto the website. So you can always go to the website, Traveling with Françoise, to the television page and catch up from episode one. And you'll see quite a transition. I guess it's a transition. How about you see the show just getting better?
I mean,
yeah. It's just getting better from day one.
But there's nothing wrong with the first one.
No, the first
one's
was
a good,
good
show. I think it almost sounds negative, though, if it's getting... I guess it gets better.
My goal
you
is
want
to make...
get better. Everything has to get better.
Yeah, my goal is for every single one to be better than the last one.
Yep.
But yeah, I cried when I watched the first one. I said, dang, we really did that. Anyway. All right, today's show is presented by Coachella Valley Volkswagen on Barner Road. Going out there, they have a lot of pre-owned vehicles and a lot of new vehicles. I love my Atlas. In fact, I was thinking about it the other day. The name is perfect for what I do. Atlas.
It is.
It was made just for me. And that SUV is like driving. It is so easy to drive.
I'm telling you, I think that I can just see you just taking shortcuts now.
Yeah.
Traffic is no longer an issue.
And it automatically will switch itself into four-wheel drive if I need it. So I like that. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I don't have to worry about any of that. It just does it on its own when it feels me go over this gigantic boulder.
Yep. You're like, you know what? I can get there faster through that
desert.
Yeah,
exactly. I'll take a shortcut. All right. I want to read a quick email here. This is from Gina Edwards. She said, good morning, Françoise. Love the show. She's talking about the television show. Have not been to the center for 30 years. Wow. Tons of stuff there. The curator was fantastic. Yes, Dr. Phillips did an amazing job. And she enjoys the car commercials that we did on the show. She said they work out really good. I really like the one at the end, the blatant plug where I'm standing in front of my new Atlas with the Science Center behind me. It was just fun. You know, we just did it. So thanks, Gina Edwards. You know, you've been a big supporter for a long time. Really appreciate it. And I always read every single email I receive, folks, and I answer. It might be short. Might be a little quick answer, but I always make sure that I answer you. So don't be afraid to send me an email. Just go to the website, travelingwithfrancoise.com, and all the information is right there. Okay, later on the show, we have some tickets, short film festival tickets, Comic-Con tickets, and $25 gift card to any Kaiser Grill restaurant or Kaiser Restaurant Group facility. We'll do that as we go along. If I remember, half the time I forget because I get so wrapped up in our guest. But at this point, I think we're going to step aside so we can give Tom Nolan the floor and we can talk about airports, all about them, from security to why you have to do this, why Palm Springs International is one of the most friendliest airports out there, and a lot more right here on Traveling with Francoise on Money Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You are listening to Traveling with Francoise. I am Francoise Rhodes, your host. Well, it is time to introduce our guest, Tom Nolan, the Executive Director of the Palm Springs International Airport. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Francoise, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'm thinking 6 or 7 years was the last time you've been on the show.
It could be.
It's been a long time. So how long have you been the executive director at the airport?
I've been there 10 years.
10?
Wonderful 10 years. And I can't believe time flies.
It does fly. It does fly. Now, we were talking, and people don't really even know there is an executive director of an airport. First of all, it sounds overwhelming to me to even have that position. But you always have a smile on your face. So you must love what you do. Tell us, what does an executive director do? What is your role?
Well, let me tell you how I got here. I grew up in Milwaukee. I used to play basketball and see the jets go by. We live near to the airport. Mm-hmm. I got my pilot's license, and I got a business degree from Marquette University. And I married my high school sweetheart, and we've got 5 wonderful children. Today's Father's Day. Thanks.
I know, for being here. Thank you, by the way, Father's Day. Yes.
But I didn't want to be a commercial pilot because of the travel and with such a large mm-hmm. family. So I said, what else can I do? And somebody said, there's people at an airport yeah. that run it.
Uh-huh.
I said, really? So I put on that suit and tie, went over to see the director of the airport, Barry Bateman, back then. And the rest is history. I saw him at his desk with the operation of the airport all in his hands, and it was just a great experience.
Well, Tom, you make it sound like it was so easy. The rest is history, but I have to imagine the steps that you had to take to become the executive director weren't easy.
Well, it wasn't. You have to have a business degree is really a good thing because it is a very complex business. You've got to have engineering savvy. You've got to have marketing. You've got to have HR. You've got to have planning. You've got to have all types of different techniques. And I've worked at 7 airports now over 30 years. So you accumulate every time you experience an airport, and some of them are very different. You take that cumulative experience and apply it. And Palm Springs International has been just a wonderful opportunity, and we've worked real hard to get it to where it is today.
So what is the smallest airport? Where is the smallest airport you've worked at?
Well, the smallest would probably be down in Georgia. There wasn't a reliever to Hartsfield. It's just a general aviation airport, 700 aircraft, but very, very busy. That's as small as they get. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they get all the way big as Los Angeles and so forth. So there's a full array of sizes of airport and complexities. But mind you, PSP Airport is a very complex. It's a fully certificated airline airport. We do all the same things that an LAX does. We just do it in a smaller package, and we do it friendlier.
Oh, you do a lot friendlier, because I have yet to hear anyone coming in and out of Palm Springs International, PSI, complain about it not being such an easy airport to navigate. One thing, though, that I have always wondered, given the word international airport in the name there, does that make us, well, it makes me want to think that we should be getting planes from, Hawaii and just all around Australia, Europe, all around the world coming into Palm Springs International Airport. How does the international, I know we get Canadian flights in all the time, is that how it figures into the international?
Correct. In the late 90s, the city of Palm Springs decided with the advent of Canadian flights to say, we're an international airport now. And today we actually serve 5 cities. It's our fastest growing market with Air Canada and WestJet there. And Canadians love the Coachella Valley and mm-hmm. everything Palm Springs and the Valley have to offer. So we have lots of international flights. Canada is an international origination.
Does it have to do, now we're on this subject, we'll just go with this topic for now. Does it have to do with the length of the runway? Because if our presidents were flying in here and out of here pretty easily with this big, gigantic jet there, what does it take for you to expand? First of all, Tom, have you thought of a way that we can expand this airport and have flights coming in from farther away? Have you thought about that?
Well, outside the United States you're referring to? Well, we have thought about it, but the challenge in the Coachella Valley is there staying power? Is there sufficient demand for a Lufthansa to invest a $60 to $100 million aircraft and fill those seats going to and from Frankfurt? And there's other components to that equation. We don't have a full customs where they have people checking luggage and so forth, and that's a whole nother equation. And when you're this close to Los Angeles, which is one of the top five international hubs in the country, it's a hard sell to say, hey, listen, why do it? But here's the gig is you could fly one stop to major hubs, connect and be in Europe or Asia, one stop.
Right. And more each year we seem to be getting more and more airlines bringing their flights in and out of Palm Springs. So that's interesting right there, because I've always thought, okay, if you are the director, executive director of an airport, dang, let's go all the way. Let's have flights coming in from all over the world. But then I didn't stop and think about those types of logistics. In my mind, all I really thought about maybe is the runway too small.
Well, no, it's not that simple. And by the way, people get the misperception that I could just say, okay, this airline will serve the airport. I met with eight airlines earlier this year and asking them to keep the service they have and maybe grow some other markets. By the end of the day, the influence I have is very minuscule, because it's going to be the demand of the community. It's the formula for profit and loss by an airline depends on their fleet mix, the availability of aircraft, the demand in the market. All of these have an influence on whether or not an airline will decide to put that asset in this market. Well, the hard part of the equation is they could take that same asset and put it in Louisville or another vibrant city that has demand all year round and is three times our size, and fill it to 94% capacity. And by the end of the day, airlines are there to make profit for the stockholders, right, and they got to make those types of business decisions.
So when you approach an airline, you really have to sit down and say, okay, our demand season is between this amount of time and this amount of time. Since you've been there, to 10 years, you said you've been in Palm Springs, PSI. 10 years now, we have watched these mega events come into town. The film festival is one of them, but the tennis, Coachella Fest, Stagecoach, we had Desert Trip. We have I think Comic-Con is going to be growing faster than people even realize. We have more and more of these large events. Have you seen that window now, the opportunity for airlines grow in the last 10 years to be coming in and out longer?
Well, yes, absolutely. Remember the Great Recession. That really put a stymie on leisure travel and so forth. In Coachella Valley, one of the driving things in any market is population. It's good to have a solid base of population. And then there's the business and the leisure mix of travelers. Airlines prefer the business traveler because they pay more for a ticket and they don't carry as much luggage. So we're a leisure market. All of those events have been very instrumental in growing the demand. But those events are just spontaneous. They aren't sustained. So our big challenge in the Valley is the drop-off in demand during the summer. So when that changes, we're trying to expand that shoulder season with events and population growth. And airlines sometimes are willing to take a little chance, say, okay, let's see what we could do to generate interest. But overall, demand, population size, those variables are going to dictate by the end of the day if an airline's going to add service. Interesting. Huh?
It is really interesting, because there is so much more involved here. All right, what airlines do we have that come in and out year-round?
Well, we've got nine great airlines.
Year-round?
Not year-round. Let's talk about the major carriers. We've got American, Delta, United, Alaska. Mm-hmm. Those are our four very big airlines that have the networks year-round. Then we got the Sun Countries, the Allegiance, and WestJet, and Air Canada, JetBlue and Virgin America, which was just absorbed by Alaska itself.
Right.
So nine airlines serving 18 cities. And yes, there is seasonality. Sun Country to Minneapolis takes a sabbatical during that part of the year, and so do some of the other airlines as well with the seasonality. The Canadian carriers, WestJet and Air Canada, trim back a little bit because the demand isn't as strong during the off season. Mm-hmm. But overall, can you tell me how many passengers, total passengers, we served at PSP Airport last year.
All right. I looked at that a couple weeks ago.
And you want to diplomatically pass?
And I'm thinking, because I said to myself, Francois, you should know this. And then I thought, well, maybe I could be wrong. So I was going to.
Then never mind. I won't put you through the agony.
Because I said, Sean and I, we talked about the number when you were going to. But now you give us the number. No, it's okay. I should have had, but I wanted to ask you the questions, Tom.
I know that you know, and you just want to make sure I know. So
what is it?
2 million.
2 million. Because I know we are getting over
2 million total passengers.
12 million visitors. They say annual visitors
now
at Coachella Valley. 2 million.
2 million total passengers. That's enplaned and deplaned. And that's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. And we're growing. Now, a lot of people think, oh, my gosh, we're going to expand the airfield. And no, our airfield is fine. We're not going to lengthen runways. We're not doing any of that.
We don't have
a master plan, analyze that very closely. That is fine. We got to make some mods to our terminal. We're planning right now to start phase one of some modifications to make it to sustain that convenience and the relaxing feel. So as we grow. But please don't think the property boundary is going to change. It's not. 940 acres, 12.5 million square feet of pavement. That's all going to stay the same.
Well, I mean, I'm one of those. I'm like you. My dad and I, we used to go to air shows. He was sort of a novice pilot. In fact, even now when I'm going to Palm Springs, I will try to cut through leaving Palm Springs through the airport to the drive around there because I just want to look at the planes. I was thinking, where are these people going? I'm always fascinated by where people are going and how excited they are to be getting in a jet and going somewhere and seeing the private jets. We'll talk about those in a minute, too. Because during events, it's a parking lot for private jets over there. If you want to see what kind of private jets they have, just drive over there and look through the fence. Really something. And then the president's coming into the valley, that must be some sort of a nightmare, even though it isn't. I know you have it all worked out, but still, logistics-wise, that has to be quite something. So let's get back. Let's go back to you just a little bit before we go to break. We're going to go to break here in a few minutes. But how did you coming to Palm Springs International, how did that come about? Was it some place you had, did you have an eye on this market? Was it out of the blue? How did this come about in your life?
Well, it's things happen for reasons. And I just had a professional seeking, the city of Palm Springs was looking for a new director. And I think my predecessor went through some pretty tough times. He was here for a short time, and they just conducted an interview process. They said, where do you think this airport can go? And I was able to articulate its potential and identify some of the challenges. And Palm Springs, the city of Palm Springs, is a very progressive city, great minds, great people, despite some of the recent negatives. It's a great city. Oh. The Coachella Valley has first-rate residents and people and all of the leaders. So my wife, I remember her getting off the plane, and we went to the top of the escalator, and she said, why wouldn't we want to live here? Were in Wichita, Kansas at the time. So there's a big difference in scenery, quality of life. And California is a great place.
Huh. Interesting.
Isn't that nice?
It is very, very nice. And is the airport, because through the channels to come here, as an executive director, is an airport supposed to make money?
Well, most people think tax dollars support it. It does not. Palm Springs International Airport has been self-sustaining financially since its inception back in the late 40s and 50s. So all of our revenues we generate, and that's one of the things I do, is manage all those lease agreements and collect the revenues, make sure all the rules and regulations are enforced, and work with all the car rentals, the airlines, the concessionaires, the businesses. And all of those lease revenues and parking revenue and concession revenues all get into a pot, about $22 million, and we only spend what we bring in. And we try to set some money aside for capital improvements, and we do rely on FAA Airport Improvement Program funds as well. Mm-hmm. So the combination of all of that keeps us self-sustaining. I sign everything on a daily basis. I don't care if we're purchasing toilet tissue or we're paying for a $10 million project. We review that extremely closely. Everything is treated as though it was our own funding, as you would in a household, every dollar that's spent. So we're very, very sensitive. The airlines like us because we're so efficiently run and our cost is low to them. And that's one reason they're trying to sustain their service here. It's all about operating efficiency of an airport.
Well, it's impressive to know that you're that hands-on, that you know exactly what runs through the airport, because I don't think a lot of people realize that. They might think that there's a board that's telling you to sign that paper for that check for the toilet paper or whatever. But do the airlines, do they lease space from an airport?
They do, absolutely. That's a billion-dollar company. We've got a 45-page lease agreement. And they lease it, and they expect a level of performance for them to make money and profit and move their passengers in a very expeditious manner. So the safety, the efficiency, all lands on us as a landlord to ensure that we're providing them the level of service to let their businesses foster. Same with car rental, same with the Starbucks there, same with – we even have a small hospital on the property of the airport. There's a medical facility. We have the Air Museum. We have SkyWest has mechanics with 140 high-paid mechanical jobs, two FBOs and some other ancillary businesses, about 150 private aircraft. Every gallon that's pumped, all the parking revenue, it all goes into one big pot, and we manage it very closely and run an airport.
And I think right there you brought up something. I think we forget about all the businesses that are on the other side. We're the Air Museum. That whole strip over there is on airport property, and they lease all that from the airport.
That's right.
Huh. Wow, that's very, very interesting. Okay, I don't want to start another topic because we're going to have to go to break here in just a minute. But when we do come back, I want to talk, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about air safety. That's a huge concern, and what you have been doing through the years to bring the airport up to speed and to make all your clients comfortable. I want to talk about the stress level that you have when someone as a president comes in, how you handle all that, which you seem pretty calm and cool, but yeah, he's shaking over here. That's and I'm sure you've met the president. And we'll talk a little bit about parking. That's a big thing. Parking is a big issue for airports. On that note, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we have a lot more. Stick around for local and national news. You're listening to Traveling with Francoise right here on Money Radio 1200 and 100.9 FM. And then, of course, for those of us in our Arizona station. Okay, folks, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You're listening to Traveling with Francoise. I am Francoise Rhodes, your host, joining in today in studio for a special show, really, because Tom's spending the entire hour with us, is Tom Nolan. He is the executive director of the Palm Springs International Airport. So again, Tom, thanks so much for spending the time with us.
It's my pleasure.
All right. Let's see. We were talking about, in break, we talk a lot of things in the break, folks, because there's just time to talk and we're just chatting about all sorts of things. But commission, you brought up the word commission a few times. Airport commission. Why does the airport need a commission? What do they do?
Well, City of Palm Springs owns and operates the airport, so we, the city, are the legislative body and the authority. But City of Palm Springs is very good at forming commissions to get public input. This 19-member commission by the airport has, of course, 19 members,
that's
represents
19.
The entire Coachella Valley. And together they help. I will bring issues to them. They will provide some policy advice. For instance, do we want to offer the cell phone lot? What will that do for the airport revenue? Is it going to help the customer efficiency, lower traffic on the front roadway? And full support, we did that 8-10 years ago. Mm-hmm. When we embark on a project to make major expenditures like a runway rehabilitation, the new ticketing wing remodel project, that all is vetted through the airport commission. Very smart, dedicated people, very successful people.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Bob Elsner, you had mentioned,
right.
You know Bob, he's hopefully listening today. Brian Watts is the current chairman. Bob was there for 8 of the 10 years I was. Bob Gephardt, Dr. Bob Gephardt was one, and so was Norm King, previous city manager. And 19 people with great minds and dedication, and we talk about a lot of these things. But the day-to-day running of the airport, that's just my responsibility as a department head for the City of Palm Springs.
So, Tom, for the commission, do you go to them or do they come to you? How do you say, hey, guys, we need to talk?
We have monthly meetings scheduled. And then it's incumbent upon me to, whether it's a planning issue, a project issue, a marketing issue, so forth, I will, with the city manager, we'll formulate an agenda. We'll bring it before the airport commission. There isn't a lot of stuff covered because, again, they're advisory in nature, but we bring them a lot of the fun stuff and some of the tough stuff, too.
Okay. All right.
So budgets as well.
Yeah, budgets. Everybody cringe when I hear the word budgets, huh? Right, parking. You brought up parking. The cell phone lot that you add, I think that in today's day and age is a must where people can park, and because they can't clog up the airport anymore. Ever since, of course, we all know, ever since 9/11 changed the world of airports completely forever for the landscape there. So there's no clogging up anyway of parking. Everybody remember they used to park way back out in front. Everybody wanted to stay right there for their friends to come out. But with the use of cell phones now, that to me just seemed a logical move. Now, the cell phone parking area, is that something I know during the holidays, during the Christmas time, that big parking area off to the right becomes holiday parking or overflow parking.
Correct.
And the cell phone parking is in the same area, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, about is it? Now, one of the challenges to all airports is managing ground transportation because more and more people drive more and more cars. And we have about 930 spaces in our public parking area, and we want to keep it convenient. All of those spaces are convenient in front of the terminal. During the holiday time, obviously, we exceed that capacity right off of Kirk Douglas there. We're fortunate. We've got about 700 cars we can park. Cell phone does make up about 100 of those. And part of that cell phone philosophy is not only convenience for the customer, but it helps relieve the strain in the parking lot and on the roadway itself. Rather than have people ride around waiting for someone to land, they go to the cell phone lot if they're technologically savvy enough, wait for the call, and pick them up at the curb. All airports are strained with handling ground transportation.
I can imagine, because you have to figure out, I personally like to just park my car there. The fee is it 12?
It's $17. It will be $17 now. Yes.
A day?
Yes.
$17 a day.
Yep.
And for the convenience of having your car there when you, if you're only going for a couple days and then coming back and picking it up.
Precisely.
But people say, why do you need to charge? Why do you need to charge anything? Why couldn't it be just $5 or $10? What does the income come from parking? Where does that go? Where does that go? What
it goes
do you do
with right
that?
Into the operation of the airport. We've got 12.5 million square feet of pavement that needs to be maintained. We've got thousands of lights. We've got 250,000 square foot of buildings. We have insurances, we have electricity, we have all the energy costs, the water. We've got 940 acres, 6 miles of fencing. We've got security systems that are very elaborate that do break from time to time, and cameras cost a lot. And we've got all the dedicated staff that work there, and you've got to provide benefits, insurance, and so forth. And all of that adds up to about $22 million very quickly to run an airport.
How many employees do you have?
Well, about 70 straight, and then when you add contracted, close to 100.
Okay. All right. So parking is crucial, but it's crucial for the consumer. I mean, a lot of people do want to park. And then, of course, the pickups. Now, with all the Uber and the Lyft and all these other different types of modes, of course, there was a big fight with the taxi. I don't know. I guess it was a big argument because the taxi people were worried they would be losing all their rights to the airport clients because that's a big market for them. The taxi companies, and then the Uber. How do you play into that? Do you have a say? Does the airport directors and all the airports, or how does that work out? How do they decide who can come in and pick up the customers and who can't?
Well, that is my job. I manage all the leases and in ground transportation activity. I'm the guy that has to decide, okay, is it safe, efficient? Where does
right.
And I'll tell you about taxi cab drivers. They're the foundation of this airport. They've been with the airport ever since its inception. They will always be here despite the rideshare, the Ubers, and the Lyfts, and they still handle the majority of the traffic. They're very dedicated people. Sunline does a good job. It's a tough business in the Coachella Valley with the seasonality of the thing. Yeah. So for those taxi drivers listening right now, thank you. It's hot out there. Thank you for serving the airport. We do 200,000 cab rides a year with passengers. We also have car rentals. We do all the major car rental companies, over 200,000 car rental transactions per year. We generate they generate $60 million worth of revenue. We get about 10%, $6 million of that to go into that $22 million to help run the airport. So you have the parking fees, revenues, and everything else. And we also have shuttles to hotels. We have limousine. Rideshare is a part of that. The city of Palm Springs put a policy together. If the rideshares want to comply with that and decide to serve the airport, that's up to them. They're allowed. Unfortunately, right now they're not taking advantage of that because of some of the parameters of the ordinance. But
yeah, so, I mean, you're always new issues are always thrown at you on a continuous basis because of the way the world's evolving, technology, and everything that goes along with it. So I don't know. Like I say, I love parking, but I rent a car a lot of time when I go. For me, it's about navigating an airport easily. Palm Springs spoils you. Frankly, it's anybody that goes through Palm Springs International, they're spoiled. Because you go to other places. I was just coming back from, I was in Branson, I think I came back. I was in Colorado, that trip. And I had to go through Sky Harbor in Arizona. Of course, I had a connector, which was all the way. Same airline. I don't know how the same airline can have a connector so far away and expect you to get from point A to point B. Which, frankly, it turned out fine because there was a jet leaving earlier, and I got to leave earlier to come here. But how is the strategy? How do you lay out an airport? I mean, when you look at your layout for Palm Springs International Airport, and you want to keep it so friendly and so easy to navigate, how do you keep that in place?
Well, I can't walk from my car to my office without thinking about how we can do things better. And I can't go fly through another airport without thinking about how they accomplish that. But to regards to the larger airports, keep in mind the U.S. airlines market operates on the hub and spoke system, right? The large hub airports where all the smaller airports fly into, and then they switch planes and they go back out. And it's really a magical thing how a Phoenix can do that, how a Dallas can do that, how Los Angeles can do that. And yes, some of them are so large, there are so many flights, they have to separate concourse because we have design aircraft characteristics where they have to taxi, fit fuel trucks, have ample room in and out. There are logistics with the passenger boarding bridge. Those are 110 feet monstrosities, 55,000 pounds that they have to maneuver back and forth. You try to make them as streamlined as possible. Then you've got the clearances for the runways and taxiways. You can't intercept any of the imaginary surfaces. There are slopes coming into the runways from all angles. A typical approach slope is 24 to 1 and can go up to 50 to 1 depending if it has an instrument landing system. So we've got to preserve all these imaginary services and try to put these terminals in there without encroaching upon that and keeping it efficient. Now, the challenge is when the runway goes in, as it has at most airports decades ago, it's fixed. So you've got to work within the parameters of the runway configuration and then build out from there as the demand for an airport grows. Then you have the private side where you're surrounded by businesses and homes, and you got to try to fit that in and be compatible with the neighborhood.
You just said something about the runway being fixed, because now that I think about it, pilots from all over the world, everywhere, they have probably some sort of standard guideline of the airports. So if you were to say, okay, we want to change the angle of this runway, it would be something that would be massive to change.
Yeah.
It's not possible. So once a runway is built and in place and registered or however they licensed, whatever they do to make it a legitimate runway, that's it then, right?
Well, in some rare cases where you have massive airports still with some property, they might want to put in an extra crosswind or a parallel runway, and you got to have a certain amount of separation in order to preserve all the electronic devices. And some airports will do that, but it costs tens and tens, hundreds of millions of dollars. And if it's on a part of the property where the slope isn't according to the standards for aircraft, they add hundreds of millions of square cubic feet of soil, like San Francisco did to do their safety area. So it's always ongoing. The good news at PSP Airport, we've got 940 acres. We've got parallel runways. Our runway is long enough for our design type aircraft, and we're not have any plans in the near future. Could be decades from now. I can't speak to. Yeah. I don't know how the complexity of the area is going to change. But
the slope. So the runway isn't flat.
Well, it is. It's got to be concave because if it does rain, that rain has to run off. So a couple of ways we do that, we groove the surface.
Yeah.
Just repaved our runway 2 years ago, and we put little grooves in there and make sure the runway runs off. And if the rubber accumulates, we got to make sure we take that off because that affects the braking coefficient of the aircraft when it lands. And by the way, there's a differential of about 79 feet between one end of the runway and the other. How do you like that?
I did not know
Interesting.
That. So when you guys flip around, though, the wind, I've always heard it was the wind. Depending on which way the wind is blowing is which way the aircraft are going to take off and land. Am I right there?
Precisely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Good. I got that one right. All right. Jeez, so much involved here. Okay, where am I going next? I know we're going to have to take another break. Let's talk about
security.
Yeah,
you want to hold on to security?
I know. I don't want to talk about security.
Go ahead, Tom. What do you want to talk about?
I think, you know, Sean, why don't we go ahead and take this break? Because there's, Tom, I want to talk about.
Passenger experience.
A lot. We haven't even got there. You're going to have to come back. You do know that you're going to have to come back.
Why airlines charge what they do?
Well, we don't even, need to get into what they charge. Yeah, that's another show. We do have tickets to Comic-Con. Give Sean a call. I have VIP tickets, 3 days, general admission. Give him a call, 760-440-8255. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You're listening to Traveling with Francoise with our special guest today, Tom Nolan, the executive director of the Palm Springs International Airport. We did have a winner, and Sean, who won those tickets to? I'm sorry, I didn't have time to get our winners on the air today.
It was Paul in India.
Okay, well, congratulations, Paul. You won those. A set of general admission tickets, 3-day passes to Comic-Con Palm Springs, August 25th through 27th at the Convention Center. All right, Tom. We're going to give you, Sean and I talked about this and we decided we're going to do it. We're going to give you some trivia. One airport trivia question. And this comes from the worst case scenario survival card game travel edition. But this really isn't a worst case scenario. I think this one might be pretty easy. All right. How to pick the safest seat on a commercial jet? Is it A, sit in the middle seat in the middle of the plane? Is it B, sit in an aisle seat in the middle to the rear of the plane? Or is it C, sit in the seat closest to the front door or the cockpit?
I'll take the one farthest from the bathroom so you don't have to be exposed to the odor it's a long flight.
Would that be the B, sit in the aisle seat in the middle to rear of the plane?
Here's my approach on it. Any seat on an aircraft is safe.
Okay.
Air travel is the safest form of transportation when you compare it with driving. But I just don't want to imply by not sitting in that seat it's unsafe, quite frankly.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
I really can't partake in that because I believe air travel is so wonderfully safe.
Well, it is.
Any seat is wonderful.
Any seat's wonderful. Okay. All right.
Except the one near the restroom.
Actually, the answer was sit in the aisle seat in the middle to the rear of the plane. That's for some of the people who are paranoid.
That's the one I would have given.
Yeah. Some people, they just tell me something because they need that to soothe them because there are still a lot of nervous flyers out there.
Well, it's
against human nature to be up in the air.
But it's against human nature to drive 60 miles an hour with about 8 feet separating you and somebody else coming the other way on a cell phone.
I'm so glad that you have not allowed pilots to use cell phones while they're up there.
Yeah. I'm very proud. Our industry, you very rarely hear of incidents, and they do very well. And if you were to drive the car to your destination, the probability of you getting injured in that car is much greater. So,
yeah, that's true. How many during our peak season here in the desert, how many flights are going in and out of Palm Springs?
100 flights a day.
100 flights a day. Yeah, that really is incredible.
It sure is.
And the tower's fairly new compared to standard. The tower, frankly, is probably very new compared to tower standards.
Well, it is, absolutely. Yeah. 156 feet tall, and it can see both ends of the runway, which have differentials, as I told you earlier, in height.
Yeah.
So years ago, the old tower that was there when we arrived 10 years ago was 67 feet, and it was from the 1960s. So this is an upgraded tower. It has all the seismic characteristics in its structure. Mm-hmm. It's got state-of-the-art equipment, and we're in great hands with the fine people there from the FAA.
Well, and it's a good-looking tower, too.
It's great.
It's not one of those that's kind of obtrusive. Where it's just
we were able to talk into adding some lighting on the outside. Did you notice
that?
It
looks very nice. Yeah, it looks great at night. The whole airport really lights up at night. It looks very, very nice. Let's talk about when presidents come in. Now, this is a fun subject. I know we should be talking about airport security and talk about this. When we get people like the president coming in, how stressful is that to everyone, not just you? And how long, what are the logistics for that? How long does it take before you even know he's coming in?
Well, when you talk about stress, I'm in a very stressful job. I know how to handle that. I've been doing it for 30 years. When I started my career in Milwaukee, I was on duty when a major airliner took off from the airport. I watched it crash, unfortunately, and I responded to it. So I know the worst that could happen at an airport. So as far as stress, that's all part of the job.
Mm-hmm.
When a president comes in, as ironic as it sounds or counterintuitive, I don't get stressed out. I think it's an honor to have the president in that beautiful aircraft fly into the airport. we have a lot of things we do, and we do it well. And a lot of it is secret, so I can't really share it with
right.
you. That whole process starts well ahead of time. We mm-hmm. take it very seriously. There's a lot of resources mm-hmm. that are flown into the airport from Washington that accommodate that. But I'll tell you, the day-to-day function of an airport to make sure it comes off consistently with all the dynamic moving parts is stress in itself. But we do that very well, and that's harder to do than a presidential event, because a presidential event is ironically more fun than it is mm-hmm. stressful. And everybody does such a great job. We've, had 5 visits by President Obama, I
yes.
think it was, something like that. And it was mm-hmm. it was an honor, a pleasure to see that bird at the airport.
And do you get to go out and shake the president's hand when he flies in each time?
Oh, I have lunch with him. That's standard. I always, yeah.
Really?
People always think that. Are you kidding
me? Well, they'd let him come in here.
I'm invited to tour the plane sometime. You know,
oh,
and I've been on
the plane?
I've been on the aircraft, but I'm so focused on what we do. And
right, that's the important
presidents
part.
Are so well protected nowadays. It's rare, and I have no reason to do that.
Well, and I don't think they would let a president go to an airport where they didn't feel that it was safe and secure, that you do your job at this end.
No, better believe it, yeah.
Yeah, they were. All right. Then we do have time to touch on safety. Safety, of course, is TSA, going through the lines, all the technology coming forward. I think it's great, actually, recognition of your hand or your eyes or your face or whatever, facial recognition. I think it's all a good thing. But when all these transitions happen with new technology that comes into an airport system, how hard is it for the smaller airports, because we're considered smaller, we're not a major hub, but for those technologies to transfer down to us, is it something you have to apply for? Is it something they say you have to do within a certain amount of time, Tom, whether you like it or not? How does that work? How does that get to us?
Well, interestingly enough, the TSA is a tenant of the airport, as is FAA. So when the TSA introduces some new technological advancement in screening of baggage or people, they come to me and say, okay, here are the quarters we're actually functioning in. What can we do to make adjustments to that, change the configuration? We need extra power here to plug this machine in here. And then we got to look at all different types of aspects. What's the temperature of that area? What amount of dust is there? Because that can really distort the readout on some of this equipment. So it's, in my 10 years that I've been here, we've been through probably 10 different modifications to both the baggage screening and the passenger to accommodate the ever-changing TSA technology to keep us safer.
And it says there's a survey out that people are feeling the percentage of people, the airport security, the satisfaction has risen 9.2% of people thinking that airports are more secure now, and they feel more secure in airports, much to the complaining in the beginning when all these new strategies were implemented. So definitely. Now, is this something that you, again, as the executive director, you're always getting information feeding to you, releases and whatnot, alerts that this is what is happening in the world of airport security? Is something daily that you read that you know what's going on?
Oh, absolutely. At the airport, which I'm responsible for ultimately, our aircraft rescue and firefighting teams of people with trucks, mm-hmm. staffing personnel, and police. There's a police force there as well. Same thing. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, we have an airport security plan and a rescue and firefighting plan that I'm ultimately responsible, and we've got to carry that through on a daily basis.
Hmm. Well, how does your day start? We have just a couple of minutes left. Now we're going to go through Tom Nolan's entire day. No, not really. When you get to the airport, and I don't want to give away any secrets of any kind, but when you get to the airport, what's the first thing on your mind? What is the first thing you want to check at Palm Springs?
Well, first thing I do, as soon as I have my music on, I'm rocking out to the music or listening to the news. Mm-hmm. I see the sign at the airport and I put on my game face, and I've got to change into the executive director, because the minute I enter that property, I own it. And I own it even after outside of the airport. Mm-hmm. So I've got to put on my game face. It's like the athlete that has a gregarious, and then as soon as he gets out on the field, it's a different story. I've got to be focused and serious and try to make sure that we run in symphony. And I can't even drive my car into the airport without thinking about security issues. I'll look at the runway, what's happening out there, the flow of the traffic, the wind pattern, the building, how it's functioning, is the air conditioning properly. So about 100 things cross my mind by the time I get into the building. And then I go into the zone and just do what I have to do through all the communication methods and making sure that it's running as a symphony. It's wonderful. I really feel blessed to do it.
Well, I can tell that you love your job. I can tell you're very passionate about it. You love it. We are very lucky to have you here at Palm Springs International. Like I say, you've made great strides with the airport. It's a wonderful airport. And I think this is... Well, I don't want to ask you if you have plans on going to a bigger airport. I think you're really happy here, so we won't even go there. But, yeah, it's just quite a career choice. Very fascinating. Now, you have to promise me, because we are just going to have to wrap this up, that you're going to come back.
I'd be delighted to do so.
Okay, because I know you are very busy, and I so appreciate you being here live. And we were talking that, who knows, maybe we can figure out a way to do the Traveling with Francoise television show, behind-the-scenes look at our airport.
We can give that a try.
Yeah, and we can see how airports run. And it's just not as easy as it looks, folks. But we have to appreciate all that goes on there. So, Tom Nolan, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. And, folks, we're going to step aside. We'll be back next week. We're going to go actually to the Palm Springs Air Museum, and then we're going to talk about traveling with your pet. So have a great day. And remember, it's never too late to get a life. See you next time. Bye.